Welcome to another episode of Now About That, James and Sarah. I'm James.
And I'm Sarah.
And this will be our final episode of season three.
I know. I'm so excited for us.
This is episode number 42. We've done 42 episodes for season one, season two, and this is our 42nd for season three. And like I said, we usually take about 2 weeks off after we complete these. And it's a really good part, a really good time, because technically I'll have a week off before I start my next classes, too.
There you go.
After Wednesday. So that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Today, Sarah, you saw I went to the beach and just sat on the beach for probably about 45 minutes.
Which I loved for you.
I was like, it's been a week, so I'm just gonna, I usually go and get my hair cut, and when I go and get my hair cut, there's a beach like literally down the road from the place that I get my hair cut at. So I just went and I typically go and grab my lunch and then go to the beach and sit in my car and eat. And today I was like, you know, it's a really nice day out because it was sunny, but it wasn't too sunny. And it wasn't hot. It was like around 70-ish degrees outside. And then there was wind blowing. So it was a really comfortable temperature. So I was like, I'm going to go and I'm going to walk out on the rocks for a little bit and stand for a little bit. And then I looked over and I was like, ooh, there's a sandy little part right there. I'll go sit on a rock on that sandy little part. And I sat there for about 30 minutes and just sat there and listened to the waves.
Love that.
So fun times.
It's good to disconnect in nature a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. And then I got back home and I have been watching, or no, I went to the grocery store first. I kind of just drove around on my way back home. I didn't take the route that I usually take. I just kind of let the road take me wherever I wanted. And then I was like, okay, I don't know where I am, so I should probably figure out how to go.
You know, that's the best part.
I was in South Providence, which is not too far from where I needed to be anyway. And it was around where they had Providence Pride last year. So I knew where I was once I got to a part where it was familiar to me. And then I just got back on 95. And then I went to the grocery store and got some snacks because I wanted some fruits. So I got some grapes and I got some blackberries, and I was walking around over in the produce section. I was like, ooh, there's peanuts, and I got a big bag of peanuts. Kind of just doing whatever I want this weekend.
There you go. That sounds like fun.
It's been a weird, rough week.
I would agree.
Like, we can start, so we will eventually, I pulled a few Reddit scary stories that we'll talk about, but I just wanted to kind of give a quick update on things that happened this week and talk a little bit about what's going on. So I had a weird conversation last week, and I think we talked about it a little bit, with a manager who had another manager email him. And then he forwarded it to my boss, Karen, and it was about me pushing back and telling people that I couldn't approve something because they didn't give me the information. We talked about that, right?
It sounds vaguely familiar.
So, well, during the meeting that we had on, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday last week, he was like, well, I'll just send him a note and just let him know to kind of touch point with you. I waited until Tuesday afternoon and I was like, I haven't heard anything, so I'm just going to schedule something. So I scheduled a meeting with him on Wednesday or Thursday. One of the four days that I was in after Tuesday. And I said, I just scheduled a quick meeting, and I was like, I went into the meeting and I was a few minutes late because I forgot I had signed up to help train another session. And I was just like, so just let me know what's going on. And he was like, oh, well, it seems like some of the supervisors are taking your emails, and they seem like they're being yelled at or being like talked down to because it's something that they should already know. And I agree, they should already know. And I was like, so why are we having this conversation then? This should be a conversation you should be having as a manager with your supervisors, telling them that maybe they're reading too much into the context of the email. And he was like, well, maybe what we could do, or what you could do, is potentially like add a hello or a good evening or whatever. And I was like, I typically start every single email I send with good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever time of day it is.
Right.
And then go into what I'm telling them, because I was told 10 years ago that it makes sense to start your email like that and not just jump into the like the information, because people will take it better. So yeah. I typically start all my emails like that. So I was like, the only time I don't is when I'm answering from my phone. And he was like, oh, well, I'll pull up an example. And he pulled up an example, and it was like, I looked at it, and the time and date lines up with what I was saying. I answered it while I was on my way home. Shut the front door. That's awesome. 93.57% for my Unit 9 assignment.
Woo!
Sorry, I just got that notification, so I wanted to look at it. But I was like, that's an email I got. I was on my way home. I was sitting in traffic, and I was like, you know, I like to answer my emails as soon as I can, as quickly as possible. And he goes, I totally understand. And I agree, you do a really good job of answering emails quickly. And I was like, so what I did was answered on my way home. And I'm like, it's hard for me to throw in flowery words and like nice content, like nice. I'm like, I'm a very high blue, which is an insights talk. It's where you are very data driven, and a lot of the information you give is to the like just states the facts, and there's not too much flowery words or emotion put into it, because I'm not that type of person. That's not how I communicate. My communications are, here's the information you asked for. There you go. And that's just the way I am. I'm like, sure, can I try to send an email where I add some flowery words in there? I can try. I'm not going to say I'm going to be able to, because that's not how I communicate. And then the other thing was, he was like, sometimes they get an email and you respond, the people that you put in the email, it feels like they are embarrassed because of the people that are included in the email. And I'm like, well, here's the thing for that. Every time I get an email on Outlook, whenever I respond, I do Control Shift R, and that's a shortcut for reply all. Like that's just how I always reply, whether there's one person on it, whether there's 15 people on it, because most of the time they're asking me a question, and it's a question that everybody wants to know the answer to anyway.
Right, so, which is why they're on the email in the first place.
Yeah, so I just do Control Shift R and reply all. So I was like, I never just add more people to an email unless there's something like, they can help you with this. I'll add someone that can help. I'm like, that never happens. I don't add someone just so that they see that the conversation happened. If they're not on the original email, unless there's something that they can do or something that they can help with, I don't add them. And I was like, so that's how I respond. I was like, what I can do is try to do Control R and just respond to the one person that sent the email. But I don't think that's an effective way of sending communications, because they're asking a question. Everybody else is going to be like, well, he just didn't answer. Like, I did answer. But he basically, at the end, he was like, from what I get, a lot of people don't find you approachable because the way that they get communicated, it seems like they are being talked down to because it's something that they should know already. I'm like, the only time that I respond like that is when I've gone through it over multiple times in supervisor meetings or in email communications or one-on-one with them. Unless I've never gone over the instance or the issue with that person, I usually explain exactly what they need to know. So I was like, I don't know what you want me to do here. I can try to add more flowery words into my emails. I can try to not reply all, but I don't like, that's, it's not my, like, we'd go through a giving and receiving feedback session, and what you, and we've talked about it here a few times, the emotion that you put into an email and how you read it is totally on you.
Right.
Like, I could say, nicely done, or nice try, and it could come across as me saying, oh, nice try, idiot, when in fact I'm just saying, oh, nice try, you tried, good job.
Yeah.
And it's like, whatever emotion that you put into the email you're receiving, that's on you, boo. That's on you.
Yeah. Like, it's one thing if, like, okay, you and I have known each other long enough, over 20 years at this point,
yeah.
that I know what tone of voice you're taking when you're texting me.
Yeah.
So, like, I would know in that instance if something was off. But, like, my coworkers, even my coworkers that I'm friends with, I still can't read, like, something in their tone and, like, what they're saying. So, like, why would I assume that I understood the tone?
Yeah.
Or the emotion behind something that was being written by a stranger to
me. Yeah, and, like, what I said basically to him was, if you ever have a supervisor that feels like I've been rude to them or whatever, ask them to send me a Teams message, because most of the time it's probably I was answering on the go and I didn't take the time to add in the flowery words.
Yeah.
Because I'm usually answering I answer the questions as soon as I have them, as soon as they get asked, because I like to make sure that they have the content that they need quickly. Like, that's just the way that I am. So that was an odd conversation. And then on Monday or Tuesday, I don't remember which day, but I think it was Tuesday. I got a phone call from one of the hiring managers of the positions that I interviewed for. And I think I already told you and Sam this. They said that they were going to go with someone that they had already been working with and had helped with a few projects already. And I gave them feedback and I was like, that's fine. I kind of had that assumption just based on the conversation that we were having. And it's like, that's just how this team has worked in the past anyway, with another interview that I had where someone had already been working with the team. So they already decided to hire that person instead. And she was like, well, we would still like to work with you on some projects if you're willing. That way we can kind of build up. And there are positions that will be opening in the future that I think we would like to have you on as a teammate. So if you would like to, we can continue working on some projects, or we can work on projects together. And I was like, that's fine with me. It's frustrating. That's how it has to work. And that's how I have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, they said how impressed they were. And they were like, we can learn from you because you're really good with technology based on some of the things that you sent us and we looked at. I was like, so that's my problem. It's like, you're saying all of these really nice things and how I'm really good at what I do, but you're not hiring me just because you have never worked with me. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
And it's very frustrating because that's just the way it's been, and it's very annoying. And then I was looking yesterday on my careers page, and I had been rejected from that other job too. So neither of the two jobs that I just interviewed for, I'm even getting another interview for. So I was super frustrated with that all day on Friday, because I looked on Friday and it wasn't even so much that I wasn't getting it, because that was the one that I knew that I probably wasn't going to be getting, because one of the people that are in the interview pool was someone that already works in that department. So I was like, well, that's kind of one kind of check mark against me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the fact that I didn't even receive like an email or notification from anyone that I wasn't moving forward in the interview process. And like, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
So I reached out to the talent coordinator on Friday and I said, hey, I just wanted to reach out and see if you had heard any feedback as to why I'm not moving forward in the interview process with this group. If you could just let me know any details. And then I also sent the person that the hiring manager and the two people that interviewed me a quick email too. And the two people that interviewed me are out for vacation or holiday or something. So they won't get back to me anytime soon anyway. But it's just like, it's frustrating because I'm like, I do so much for this company, and like, I do little projects on the side. I've helped global teams. I'm always available to any global team that needs any help or has any issues. But it just seems like everything I'm doing, unless I'm actually working directly with the people that will eventually be hiring, which how the hell am I supposed to know that?
Right.
I can't get ahead anyway. And then like, I see all these people that keep getting like promotions to a manager or to a higher role. And it's like, I'm stuck the way where I am. And it's very frustrating. I'm just like the day. That's kind of why I just kind of sat at the beach today and just kind of hung out on the beach, because I'm just like, I'm very frustrated. And like, I'm doing all this stuff for a facility, and then like in Spencer and Santa Rosa and helping with an integration and acquisition and transfer, and helped with multiple transfers in Indiana, worked as a training lead for the entire facility for 6 years in Indiana, and then moved over to Massachusetts, and I'm working my ass off in Massachusetts. And it just seems like every time I do something, like everything I do, it just means nothing, because I'm not getting anything out of it other than my regular Monday through Friday, 40 hours a week.
Right.
Like, there's no fulfillment in what I'm doing now. There's nothing fun happening. There's nothing exciting. There's nothing challenging. Everything I'm doing now, it's bantering back and forth with supervisors that don't know how to do their job, and then get frustrated with me because I'm telling them how to do their job and they don't want to do it.
Right.
It's just like, I'm at the end of my ropes, and it's just getting worse and worse, more and more frustrating. And I am excited to be working with the LATAM team, Latin America team. They've been really fun. They've been really nice. It's been really good getting to know them. There's some tension in some of their meetings. So, Ricardo, if you're listening, don't listen to this, because their team does listen sometimes. But the last couple of meetings that I was in, they were very, it's very tension. There was some tension in the group, and I was like, but it's not like nothing. It's nothing crazy.
Mm.
But they've been nice to work with, and it's, I'm kind of trying to decide if I want to say, I know that you gave me this task to work on, but the other things that you guys are doing are more interesting to me than this one.
Mm.
Because they were like, let's have you start working on this. And I was like, okay, but I don't know anything about it. And it seems like it's something that I would need to know about it before I can actually do anything. Whereas the other thing that they're working on, I do know a lot about, and it's like something that's exciting for me. But I'm kind of like hesitant to say, I know you gave me this project, but can I start? Can I help you guys with this one?
Mm, I get that.
But anyways, how's Sarah? That was me talking for 20 minutes.
I'm okay. Just chugging along. I too got some rejection emails this last week from appointments. Not appointments. Applications. Sorry. Applications that I had been putting in because I wanted to be a library assistant. Like, actually get to utilize my degree. That'd be super cool.
No.
But so far, it's just been rejection after rejection. The job market is not great right now, which doesn't help.
No. Yeah, it's garbage.
And just the other thing that doesn't help, though, is like using AI to filter resumes and applications. Like, I understand, but at the same time, it's just like you're missing out on so many qualified people because you're just basing this off of like one or two different words. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And just, and I personally feel like they should have to disclose that.
Yeah, you would think that it might be something that they would want to disclose, like AI is involved in the hiring process or the
right,
the weeding process.
Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't sit right with me. But anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, I would say that's been going on for a long time, though. Like, that's not,
you know, new. But it's really ramped up.
Yeah.
In the last like year. Because I ran into it a lot before I got the job at LBJ last year. Mm. So.
Well, would you like to get into some of these scary stories and read through some of these? I sent a bunch. Like I said, we don't have to go through all of them. I think I sent 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15. Don't have to go through all of them. A lot of them are pretty long, so we probably won't even read a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I just thought they were pretty, they sounded really interesting. But the first one that I can read, it's the one that I'm looking at first, is called A Strange Coincidence. And it said, I had a strange nightmare a few months ago. The memory is fuzzy, but I remember meeting two girls on the road and bringing them home, ? I was showing this phone to one of them, showing her how to I edit photos of, if you use IBIS, IBIS Paint, I don't know what that is, then you know about the Liquify pen. I was about to show her how to use it, but the face I was going to edit was kind of just kind of smiled creepily before I even started editing it. I tried to ignore it, but no, the face kept widening the grin a lot. It was scary, and I woke up from the nightmare. That afternoon, I was watching a YouTuber named BigGaming64 play a horror game named Miracoles? Miracoles? Sure. There was a grandma character a bit into the video in 1932. 19 minutes and 32 seconds, the grandma started to smile the same way that I dreamt of. And then there's an emoji with like the scared little drippy sweat drip thing.
Yep.
It wasn't the first time that this kind of thing has happened to me. Somewhere in March, I had a dream of hugging a friend. Then in the afternoon, my parents were leaving for Umrah? I don't know what that is. My dad hugged me just like how I had hugged my friend. Has this ever happened to you?
Yes.
No.
Umrah is sometimes considered the lesser pilgrimage in that it is not compulsory in all Islam schools of thought, but is still highly recommended. So it's basically an Islamic pilgrimage to Mecca.
Oh, okay.
But it's not the big one. It's a smaller one. So, but anyway, yes, I've had dreams where the next day I saw what was in the dream.
Oh, okay. Since you say it like that, yes, I've had that happen to me. Maybe not the next day, but like at some point.
Yeah.
In the future, it happens, and that's always called déjà vu.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I've definitely had moments of deja vu, but I've not had like perhaps as creepy a moment of deja vu, but I definitely have had it. Okay. And then I'm assuming that you read that one first because you wanted me to read the longer one.
Well, they're all pretty long after that one.
Well,
which one are you looking at now?
Pillars of Creation.
Oh, yeah, that one's real long. The next one I have up is Found Voice Recording from Missing MH370. And it looks long, but there's a lot of, like, single word, and then it goes down. It enters.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're talking about. It just looks long because it's... Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I write like that sometimes. All right.
So you don't have to read the Pillars of Creation if you want to read the other one, the found voice recordings from Missing blah blah blah. We don't have to read the Pillars of Creation.
Oh, I no. Can... I'm fine with reading it. I just thought it was long. Funny.
It's long.
All right.
It for some reason, I think that was the one that was last on my list, and then I accidentally like grabbed it and drug it out of the like the tabs, and it made its own window, and I can't remember how to get it back in a Mac, so it's kind of just on its own.
Okay, all right. So, Pillars of Creation. This is by Kaiji Shirin from 2 days ago. Just like any other humans, I'm curious about alien life. Any other human? The first time I saw the enhanced photo of Pillars of Creation, I can't help but wonder what it is. When I was a kid, I wondered what it was made of. Can we touch it? Does it feel like stone, clouds, sand? I was curious. I searched about it, but my searching wasn't enough. I want to know its entirety, even its history. There was an old sage living in the top of the hill kilometers away from us. He makes magic potion that answers your deepest questions. I drove there and brought enough money. I really wanted answers. I paid him $200 and went home. I arranged my things in my room to make huge space. I sat on the floor and placed a dead rat in front of me and a fresh rose behind me. I closed my eyes and drank the potion, all of it. The taste sucks and it smells bad. I said my thought. I want to explore the Pillars of Creation. If it's gone now and what we were seeing was just its reflection, then I want to see how it was when it was still physically existing. I want to explore it. I stayed in this position for like 2 minutes until I feel sleepy. I began dreaming. I was flying toward the stars, meteors, planets, anything I can see in there. And then I stopped. And then I slowly approached it, the pillars. I began to hear noises. They don't sound human. Their voices had vibrations and echoes. Oh God, I started to see alien life. But wasn't Pillars of Creation made of dust and gas? Whatever I'm seeing, I know I'm looking at a completely different habitat, so the living things there were built different too. This was insane. There was a light brown creature carrying a boulder with both his arms. He had a short elephant trunk on his face, and his huge eyes were dark purple. His fellow creature approached him, which I assumed was his wife. His wife had two children with her, and they helped him carry the boulder. The children were just like human children. You can see them laughing and playing. Father and mother wiped each other's faces with their trunks. I think it's their way of showing affection. I can't believe what I'm seeing. My heart was beating fast. I continued to fly. I saw another of their kind who was making a loud noise. It sounded like a cry, a mournful cry. It was kneeling down and patting a long, snake-like creature with tiny legs similar to that of a lizard's legs. It patted its head and back, and it leaned on this creature. Is it a pet? Is he, she, mourning the loss of a pet? I flew away again. This time, I saw many of their kinds lining up and carrying what seemed to be their fruits and vegetables in this habitat. They looked sad and defeated. And then I saw another, different creature. This creature was three times taller than them. It looks like a standing camel. Its skin was greenish, its eyes had long eyelashes, and it's wearing clothes unlike them. This tall being was wearing a red robe and had a diamond necklace. He took one of their offerings, smelled it, and ate it. The way it moved was similar to us humans. It began to speak in an unknown language. It doesn't sound monstrous, and it's similar to when we hear a foreigner talk. It kicked one of them, and everyone started to make depressing noises, but they can't seem to do anything about it. I feel bad for these creatures. What's happening here? As my eyes were glued to their situation, I started to fly again. But I want to see more of it. I want to see if they will be okay. My vision stopped with a quiet and peaceful scene. I saw one of their kind picking up tiny rocks. It was a child. It looked around slowly, and then it saw me. We saw each other eye to eye. There was something beautiful that I didn't expect. This kid smiled at me. Its beautiful, huge eyes sparkled, and his trunk swayed upward and laughed. I can't help but smile, too. The noise this little one made was just like any other of its kind. It wasn't human. But something about the sound made me assume it was happy and being playful to me. I tried to get closer to it. I want to play with it and let it know that I'm happy to see him, her, that I'm not an enemy. As I was trying to get close, a strong wind pushed me away and I flew again. My transportation was unusually fast now. I think I'm going to come back to reality. And then boom, I'm awake and I'm home. I looked at my surroundings, the dead rat, my bed, the glass of the potion. My mind wasn't fully recovered. I tried to relax. I started to think about those moments. Suddenly, I feel myself crying. Tears fell down my cheek and I can't control my emotion. I can't explain what I'm feeling, but it was something beautiful. I cleaned my room and rearranged everything. I lied on my bed and grabbed my phone. I looked at the Pillars of Creation once again. I zoomed in, every part of it. And then I looked at his entire photo for like 2 minutes. Can't take my eyes out of it. I remembered that tiny creature that smiled at me before I went back. I closed my eyes and I smiled.
So it sounds like this person had a Molly trip or an acid trip of some sort.
I don't know. That was wild.
Peyote, maybe? Something that causes some type of some type of hallucinations.
Right.
But that was very nicely written. I mean, aside from some of the spelling errors, I'm assuming English probably isn't the first language for this person.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. It's not actually that bad.
Yeah, it's really good. Except for just a few. You did it very well where you kind of changed it to where it was supposed to be. Like instead of spoke, it's supposed to be speak.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I would have completely screwed that up because I'm very much read as I go.
Oh, I'm always reading 10 words ahead.
Yeah.
In my mind.
I think that's why I don't like to read that much, because my brain overanalyzes every word. And if I get stuck on one word, it takes me forever to get back into it.
I can understand that.
All right. So this next one is called Found Voice Recording from Missing MH370. And it is from deep_host2957. The first one I read, which I didn't remember to say the name. It's just a random letters and numbers. But I think it's supposed to spell out lazy buns, but it's L4ZYBVNS. I think that's supposed to be lazy buns.
I mean, that's how I would take it.
That's how I would too. All right. So this one says recovered voice draft, unsent, personal device backup, first officer Farq Abdul Hamid, Malaysia Airlines flight MH370, March 8th, 2014. Final transmission never sent. I don't know if this will reach anyone. I don't know if they'll ever find this phone or my body or any trace of what really happened tonight. But if they do, if someone reads this, please tell them I tried. I'm First Officer Farq Hamid. Farq? It's Farq Hamid. I was supposed to be to co-pilot Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, Kuala Lumpur to Beijing, routine flight. Clear skies, 227 passengers, 12 crew. I did all my checks, everything was fine, but I left the cockpit and when I came back, he locked me out. It started after we paused the IGARI waypoint. I don't know what that means. The captain, Zahari, was quiet, focused, more than usual. I chalked it up to fatigue. It was a night flight, after all. He said I could take a break, stretch your legs. He said, I'll handle things from up here. I should have seen it in his eyes. I got up, stepped out, maybe two minutes, no more. When I turned to return, the cockpit door was shut, locked. I typed in the override code, nothing. I knocked lightly at first. Zahari? Silence. Knocked again harder. Captain? Nothing. I banged on the door. Zahari, open the door. This isn't funny. Still nothing. One of the attendants came over. Is everything all right, sir? I told her to get the emergency key card. We tried it. Denied. He disabled it. That's when the turn happened. I felt it. No turbulence, no error. A long, deliberate arc. I saw the flight path display behind me stutter and flicker before it went dark. One of the crew whispered, "We're going the wrong way." I pounded on the door again. Zahari, what are you doing? Open this door. Nothing. Not a word. Not a sound. I called through the intercom. Silence. I tried the comms panel. He'd shut it off. A car's disabled. Transponder dead. We weren't just off course. We were off grid. He was taking us somewhere no one would find us. The cabin began to change. Lights dimmed. People stirred. A few passengers asked questions. Voices low and nervous. I told the crew to stay calm, to reassure them, but my hands were shaking. The aircraft descended, slow, purposeful, not like a system failure, like someone bringing us beneath radar. That was when it hit me. This was planned. He knew what he was doing, and I was locked out, helpless. I kept shouting. I threatened to break the door down. I tried. I screamed at him. Zahari, you don't have to do this. There are children on this plane. Still nothing. I slumped down against the cockpit door. I could hear the soft murmur of passengers, the hum of the engines, and I could feel the plane dropping. I think he's going to kill us, all of us. People are crying now, a baby is screaming, a man is praying aloud. One woman asked me if we were going to die. I told her no, I lied. Because I think I know where we're going. I think I know where we're going. Into the water, into the black, into silence. And the worst part, he's still not saying a word. I've flown with him before. He's always been calm, friendly, professional. I never imagined he'd do something like this. I don't know if it's grief, rage, politics, madness, whatever it is. He chose this. I hear the ocean in my ears now, like it's already rising. I was supposed to get married this year. She's waiting for me in Beijing. Or she was. I hope someone tells her I loved her. I hope someone tells her, my mother, I tried. This will be my last flight. I'm sorry. Wow.
Damn.
I didn't realize before, like, I just read the title and, like, the very beginning portion of it. I didn't realize it was tied to that Malaysia airline flight that went missing. And the very first, like, comment on it says, this reads like a movie script, but the fact that it ties to a real unsolved tragedy makes it hit way harder. Didn't they find the Malaysia story or the Malaysia flight?
I think so, but the writer said it's fiction.
Yeah.
They tried to stay as close to the facts that we knew of.
That's crazy.
It is. Definitely. That was really good.
It was. You want to read a couple more of these?
Yeah. I went ahead and while you were reading that one, I pulled up all the other ones so that I could see if there was one that I wanted to read next. I wanted to read this one called Should I Be Scared? That's from somebody with old Dash and Zesev, maybe? Anyway, and the title of it is Should I Be Scared? It says, I got a call from all ones today. I'm not going to sit and count how many ones those are. It was a lot of ones. It was during my lunch period at 10 in the morning. Very distorted, low quality, almost robot-like. Couldn't understand what they were saying. It was creepy sounding. I jokingly said, Jeff, is that you? And simultaneously, what I believed to be a he said, do you recognize my voice? Terrifying. After that, I said, no. And they replied, why do you call me Jeff? That's not my name. And I said, I don't know. Honestly, was lost for words. Then said their name. Honestly, it was so distorted I couldn't understand, and it was loud in lunch. Maybe it said Michael Nathan? Not sure. Pretty sure on the Michael. I'm home alone tonight. I'm terrified. I don't know if I'll sleep. I want to try to, like, track the number, find the real number. I know I probably can't. But I'm, like, also angry? I don't know. Should I be scared?
That's interesting. I've gotten so many, like, random phone calls this week. It's so frustrating sometimes.
I love this comment that says, you're okay. Just drink some water and chill. I don't know. Like, I never answer random numbers that I don't recognize.
I typically do because a lot of the times it's something for work or something for school or and I always answer from Indiana because I don't know if it's like something about the family. So I always answer, but it's typically like garbage. Most of the ones that this have come this week are like asking me about benefits for Part A or Part B and whatever, Medicare. And I'm like, I don't have Medicare. Stop calling me.
But
it's a bunch of scams where they're wanting to get your information because they're going to give you these quote unquote benefits that you don't, mm-hmm. that don't actually exist.
Right.
So the next one that I'm going to read is pretty long. And it's the paid, paid to watch him sleep. And it includes a like little snippet from an ad that this person responded to, apparently. And it's from Dawn of Comics, D-A-W-N of Comics, paid to watch him sleep. I was looking for a second job to help pay for school. It had to be at night since I already had a day job, and ideally I'd work alone so I could use that time to study, maybe a gas station or a store clerk position, something like that. But jobs like that go fast. Scrolling through forums and classifieds, I wasn't having any luck. Then I came across a post titled, "Someone to Watch Me Sleep." I rolled my eyes, definitely a sex thing. Hard pass. An hour later, I was still coming up empty. Out of frustration, I refreshed the page. The same post popped up. Someone to watch me sleep. So I clicked on it. I sighed and I clicked on it. Might as well see what the weirdo wanted. It read, "I'm looking for someone to watch me sleep. I have medical issues and need someone to stay awake in the room with me all night. I'm a heavy sleeper, so you're more than welcome to bring a book, your phone, or anything else you may want to pass the time. You must stay awake. I will pay $150 per night for the hours of 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., money paid each morning. Contact details below." Now I felt like crap for assuming it was a sex thing when it was actually a life or death thing. Was I willing to be responsible for someone's life? I needed the money, and 8 uninterrupted hours of study sounded perfect. I typed in the phone number and called, hoping no one would answer. No one had beaten me to it. He answered. He sounded friendly.
I always hope that nobody answers when I have to make a phone call.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I typed in the phone number and called, hoping no one had beat me to it. He answered. He sounded friendly, but had a slight edge of panic in his voice when he asked if I could start that night. It was 9:20 p.m., plenty of time to grab my things and head over. Before leaving, I wrote a note to my roommate. "I'm going to watch a man sleep. Name, address, and contact information below. P.S. It's not a sex thing." Not sure if that was the best idea. Sam would definitely think it was a sex thing now. At 10:40 p.m., I arrived at his house, a nice two-story home with a well-kept yard. Before I could ring the bell, the door opened. The man introduced himself as Timothy Roberts and thanked me for coming on such short notice. He looked exhausted, like he hadn't had a proper night's sleep in years. He led me inside and showed me to his bedroom. One last time, I assured myself this wasn't a sex thing. The room was large and neat. A king-size bed sat in the far end, a massive oak wardrobe opposite it. A bookshelf stood in one corner, next to a big comfy chair and a tall reading lamp. "You'll be sitting there," he said, pointing to the chair. Then he turned to face me. "The rules are simple, but must be followed." His voice was firm. "You have to stay awake and in this room while I'm sleeping." He paused, making sure I was listening. I nodded. "Yes, of course." "If, for any reason, you need to leave this room, you must wake me up first." He clapped his hands together for emphasis. "You must wake me up first." I clapped my hands. I don't know if that came off. "Sure thing." His expression remained serious. "Repeat it back to me." I held eye contact and recited, "I will stay awake and in this room while you sleep. If I need to leave, I will wake you first." I smiled, trying to reassure him. His shoulders relaxed slightly. "Thank you." Then he got ready for bed. The night passed surprisingly quickly. Between my studying and the soft sound of Timothy breathing, it was almost relaxing. Before I knew it, the sun was rising. A gentle alarm began to beep. Timothy rolled over, turned it off, and sat up. Looked directly at me, and he asked, "How did it go? Did anything happen?" I frowned. "No. You slept soundly, and I got a ton of studying done." I stood, stretched, and packed my laptop. He climbed out of bed, got on his robe, and sighed, "Great. Thank you." As he led me to the front door, he handed me $150 crisp new bills. "Thank you," I said, pocketing the cash. "I hope you had a good night's sleep." He gave me a small, almost relieved smile. "Best I've had in a long, long time." He hesitated. "Same tonight?" "Of course. I'm happy to come back whenever you need me." I left with a pocket full of cash and a laptop full of coursework. This might be the best gig ever. For the next 3 weeks, I watched Timothy sleep every night. Every morning he looked healthier, brighter. I didn't know what this medical condition was, but I like to think I was helping him as much as he was helping me. Everything was great until I caught a head cold. I called Timothy explaining that I wasn't feeling well, and given his health issues, it might be best if I skipped a few nights. Silence. Then softly, please come over. I'll pay you an extra $50. $200 to sit in a chair with a cold? How could I say no? If you're sure you don't mind me being contagious. I don't mind, he whispered. Oh, wait. I don't mind, he whispered. And thank you. And thank you. That night, I left my coursework at home. My headache wouldn't let me focus. Instead, I figured I'd watch some TV. 3 episodes into the Mafia show, my head dropped, my eyes closed. When they reopened, the credits were rolling. I had fallen asleep, only a few minutes, but I'd definitely fallen asleep. Heart pounding, I turned to the bed. Timothy was still there, breathing, sleeping. He was fine. Everything was fine. 7 a.m., the alarm beeped. Timothy sat up, turned it off, and stared at me. You fell asleep. His voice was hollow, disappointed. Sad. My head cold got the better of me, I admitted. It was only a few minutes. I checked on you right away. I'm sorry. He lowered his head. No, I'm sorry. He stood and left the room. Moments later, he returned with a handful of cash and extended it toward me. Take this. I counted. $500. That's too much. I hesitated. I can't take this. I won't be needing you tonight or ever again. Timothy, I know I broke the rule, but it was only a few minutes. I won't let it happen again. It doesn't matter now. He pressed the money into my hand. Silently, he led me to the front door and opened it. I stepped outside. Before I could leave, his voice shaking. Wait. I turned. His whole body trembled. His eyes filled with terror met mine. You need to find someone to watch you sleep.
Oh, man.
That's crazy.
Damn.
I like that.
No, that was good.
I thought it was like if he fell asleep, the guy was going to die. But, right. And then as it kind of went and the way that he reacted, it was like it was kind of a sigh of relief. And it's very similar to the movie It Follows, but there it's intercourse.
I hated that movie.
It wasn't a very good movie.
Oh, my God. All right.
And it had a terrible ending.
It had a really awful ending on top of being a really bad movie. Like, it could have at least had a good ending for all the bullshit, but no.
Okay. So I'm going to do one more each and then call it a podcast.
Yeah, I think we can do that. The one I'm going to do is My Neighbor Fell in Love with a Ghost by Davina_Flame_Horror. It starts off with... It doesn't start with that. The detective knocked on my door at exactly 10 a.m. I knew he was here to discuss the recent death of my neighbor, Amelia. Just last week, I had discovered her dead body withering away in bed. The detective and I began talking immediately after I ushered him inside. It's a long story, detective. The last time I saw Amelia was May 3rd, about 1 month ago. She knocked on my door, desperate and pleading. I hadn't seen her in months before that. Why was she in such a bad state of mind? He asked. Based on my research so far, she spent almost all of her time at home. She had no job, no friends. What was the emergency? To understand Amelia, you'd need to understand the cabin, I responded. Let me tell you what I am trying to figure out, the detective went on. The woman who died in that cabin was in her late 80s. She lived alone, but Amelia was fresh out of college when she moved here just 5 years ago. She told her family that she loved the house and that she was moving in with a roommate. When they saw a picture of the broken down cabin, they were adamant that it was not Amelia's style, that she would never have wanted to live there. I tried to start talking. Well, detective, people who move into that cabin typically fall in love, but not with the cabin. Clearly, there's been a mistake, he interrupted. The Amelia I'm looking for is in her late 20s, not in her 80s. We're suspecting something along the lines of identity theft. Her family hopes that she's still alive somewhere, but are very concerned that she either was kidnapped or ran away. Perhaps she even faked her death. All reasonable assumptions, Detective, I responded. But you don't live around here. You don't understand that cabin. The Amelia you are looking for did move in there 5 years ago. She did so by herself. There was no roommate. Again, you don't understand the cabin. So what you're saying is that she lied to her family, asked the detective. No, Amelia was just mistaken. This has happened before. This has happened before, asked the detective. Please go on. What am I missing? I began again. People never fall in love with that cabin. They fall in love with the spirit that haunts it. I don't believe in ghosts, uttered the detective. Well, in that case, you won't believe what I have to tell you, but I can assure you that this has happened before. The spirit that lives there can be very charming. Many times, prospective renters fall in love with the spirit immediately upon entering the cabin. That's ridiculous, exclaimed the detective. It may sound that way, but it's true. I tried to warn her on multiple occasions. I tried to get her to leave. She refused to listen and eventually isolated herself in the cabin. The detective pulled out a photo of Amelia. Take a look at this photo. This is a photo of Amelia from right after she graduated college. Is this the person who lived next door? Yes, that's exactly how she looked when she moved in. But a strange thing happens when you fall in love with a spirit, particularly the one next door. They drain away your life's energy. Says who? Did she appear tired? Drained? Asked the detective. No, quite the opposite. She was ecstatic. I've never seen someone as happy before. She was absolutely in love with that spirit. I tried to tell her that it wasn't an actual person. She refused to believe me. I warned her that every day she stays in love with that spirit, her body will age by 2 weeks. Age by 2 weeks? That doesn't make any sense, said the detective. Well, it's true. And she even knew it was happening. At first, she told me that it was worth it, that she'd never felt love like that before, that she'd been waiting her entire life to meet someone like him. For the first month, she refused to believe me. Of course, she didn't notice much of anything in such a short amount of time. How much can a person change in a month, or in her case, 14 months? She became infatuated with the spirit, telling me that she had never felt so in love before. She wanted to stay with him forever. And that's exactly what she did. It took her a full 6 months of living there to come to terms with the truth I had warned her about. She admitted that I was right all along when she came to me in tears. By that point, she was 23, but looked more like 30. You still look so young, I told her. You can still escape. You can still live a good life. Just get out of that cabin. Move into my house if need be. You can't keep staying there. But by then, she couldn't stand the idea of leaving the spirit. It was too real to her. It seemed more human and more compassionate than any actual person. That's when her isolation grew. Like the other tenants before her, they understood what was happening, but couldn't bring themselves to leave. Amelia would lie to herself. She would constantly tell herself that she would stay for just one more week, or even just one more day. But as she isolated herself away, her social life dwindled. She stopped looking for work. She stopped speaking to me, embarrassed that I knew her deepest secret. She didn't want her family and friends to see what was happening to her, so she ignored them as well. But as she isolated herself, I didn't see her again for an entire year. By then, she looked to be in her mid-40s. You can't keep doing this to yourself, I pleaded. Do whatever it takes to get out, the detective spoke up. I don't believe any of this. There's nothing like this in the scientific literature. There's no natural explanation for spirits or rapid aging. Well, detective, I urge you to check your records, see who's lived in that cabin over the decades. I have a better idea, he said. I'm going to investigate that cabin right now. Suit yourself. I've been entrusted with an extra key to show the cabin on occasion. I pulled a key out from my kitchen drawer and led him outside across the lawn into the cabin. Looks really run down, he said. Doubt it would pass an inspection. We walked inside to a strong smell of rotting wood and mold. The front door opened to a family room, which was attached to a kitchen, restroom, and a bedroom. I can't quite place the smell, the detective said. I told him about the rotting wood and the mold as I covered my nose. No, it actually smells rather pleasant. I think it's coming from the kitchen. We walked into the kitchen where the smell was strongest. The smell is amazing, exclaimed the detective. And the views from this window, I've never seen such a fantastic view. Straight to that swing hanging from that beautiful tree. I certainly see why Amelia fell in love with this house. In reality, the swing was also broken and rotting, but I didn't say anything. I let him explore the small cabin as much as he wanted to. Perhaps he would find something he was looking for. I let him wax poetic about the bathroom and his intricately designed tile work that I had clumsily done in a rush in one afternoon. I let him describe how the cabin seemed to be calling to him in a melodious tune as he stepped onto creaking floorboards that I should have fixed a decade ago. When he was done wishing all of the spiders and insects good morning, complimenting the leaky pipes, and praising the craftsmanship of the warped beams holding up the foundation, I approached him with a rental agreement. He signed it without a second thought. It was for the better this way. He was asking a lot of questions, and I had given him a lot of answers. Answers that could have landed me in a lot of trouble. But the detective was in his 50s. In 6 months to a year, he'll be unrecognizable. He'll be dead in a few years. He'll start to hear the spirit's voice tonight, and by this time tomorrow, they will have fallen in love. If he asks, I'll warn him about the dangers of staying. If he panics and begs me to help him reverse the aging like Amelia had, I'll tell him the truth, that there's nothing he can do. I won't tell him the entire truth, though, about how his fading life force keeps me young, about how when he dies in that cabin, his spirit will fuse with the rest of them, the dozens of others who have met the same fate over the last century. He'll be trapped in that cabin for as long as I live, which will, hopefully, with his help, be forever.
Whoa.
Yup.
Some crazy stuff.
Holy shit.
This one needs to refresh because there's stuff hidden. That's crazy. It kind of, like, it sounds like to me that there's potentially, like, I mean, there's mold in it, obviously, but it's probably like a really bad mold that makes you hallucinate and your health decline rapidly.
Or it's a story, and in that universe, these things are real.
It kind of also reminds me of the movie, the Island or Old? I don't remember which, but they're on an island and it like rapidly ages them.
Oh, yeah, I think it's Old. I haven't watched it, but I've heard of it. Anyway, what are you going to read next? What is your final choice?
I'm going to do Weird Lady at the Hotel I Work At.
I love that because that is the one I wanted you to do.
By a Kraken 6889. And it says, to start, I want to tell you guys that I'm a night auditor at a Hilton hotel, so I don't see many people. So the people I do see, I remember especially this lady. So about a month ago, I was working when I got a call down from a room complaining about some loud noises and bangs. The guy on the phone said she didn't have all her nuts and bolts, so to speak. I said, it's all right. I'll go check it out for you. From there, I go up and the deadbolt is holding the door open. I cautiously peeked inside to see what was going on in the room. What was going on, but she was just simply packing and had hearing problems since she was older. I decided to help her out so she didn't make any more noise and disrupt half the building. But that's not it yet. She had this super foul smell coming off her. And it looked like her face had some sort of gunk or infection all over it. Of course, I didn't say anything and just went on as usual. She then later comes down and just starts staring at me up and down with this creepy ass smile on her face. And then she started taking pictures of the TV in the lobby saying some like, people are out to get me, or something along those lines. She would randomly walk out the front canopy and just stare into space for 5 minutes, then come back in and take more pictures of the TV. All in all, some really creepy vibes. Then there's today, where I see her again, and of course she's right back at her typically weirdo shit. We're talking drinking a cup of coffee, creamer, walking into the employee room, sticking her fingers in the breakfast, and not to mention her attempting to steal the fucking hotel phone as I was ringing up a tub of ice cream for her. This lady genuinely freaks me the fuck out. Also, something of note, the housekeepers found her sheets and blankets in her goddamn refrigerator. I'm not entirely sure if this fits the criteria of this subreddit, but I have to say this lady has shook me to my core. It's like seeing a ghost in real life. I haven't been that creeped out literally ever. That was very difficult to read. Because, like, there's no correct punctuation. It's just...
yeah.
Every paragraph is just one long sentence. And it's, like, punctuated by commas.
Yeah.
It's funny. Dang.
Well, we should save these other scary stories for when we come back.
Okay.
What are you planning on doing over the break?
I have my school stuff to do, and then tomorrow, Ryan's niece is going to come down, and we're going to go to the Waterman Grill, which is in Providence, and get some lunch. She needs to do some laundry, so she's going to bring her clothes and wash some of her clothes while she's here.
I love that.
Other than that, I'm probably just going to work and do some school stuff, and then by the time we start back up, I'll be working on my dissertation, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's gonna be exciting. I don't really have any plans, to be honest.
No.
Just gonna hang out. Maybe I'll get some reading done.
Weren't you going to go back to school in the fall? Is that in the fall?
That would be in the fall. I didn't realize that I had hit my SAP max. So I have to do an appeals process. Because,
what is SAP max?
So it's where you have, the way the system looks at it is you have too many credits and you should have graduated.
Oh.
But it's looking at my previous degree as well, like the credits that transferred over from my degree at Ivy Tech.
Yeah.
It counts that towards the credits that I've earned through ACC. So I technically have not completed all the classes I need to graduate. But the system thinks that I should have already graduated, which is true. I did graduate from another school.
Yeah.
So I just have to appeal that. And then once that is appealed, then I have to retry for financial aid. So unfortunately, I just got the email saying that my financial aid was denied because of my being at SAP max.
No.
So, satisfactory academic progress. That's what it is. Sorry.
Oh.
Anyway.
A lot of noises you got going on there.
I know.
So I was, while you were reading one of those, I looked at my grades for this class. And I currently have, if I don't do anything else, my grade would still be an A. So if I don't do the discussion, my last discussion board, I will have a 92.6%.
Nice.
But if I do the discussion board, it will be 98.6%. So I will have a very high A.
Yeah, you will.
I have all day tomorrow and Monday and Tuesday to do the discussion board, so I'm just going to do it anyway. I haven't even looked at it to see what it is. Well, what are you doing this weekend? Are you doing anything fun this weekend? Gardening, drinking plenty of water, staying off the internet.
There will be gardening. There will be plenty of water. Be staying off the internet. I'm going to be hanging out with my work friend, Stephanie, tomorrow. or at least that's the plan currently, is we're gonna hang out and watch movies at her new apartment. She just moved into a new place. I'm very excited. But other than that, no, not really. Just resting as much as possible before I have to go back to work.
Yeah. Well, would you like to call it a podcast? Our last one of season 3, and then we'll be back in 2 weeks for season four.
I love that.
I did the math, and it's 126 episodes.
Dang.
We've done 126 episodes.
Wow. That doesn't feel real.
Also, for some reason, on the podcast phone, I don't have a calculator.
Weird.
Yeah. It's odd. I might have accidentally deleted it. Who knows? Well, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Now About That with James and Sarah. If you like this episode, please give us a like, a comment. Don't forget to follow or subscribe. If you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, as this will help get the podcast out to more people and help us grow. Feel free to follow us on social media. Our handle everywhere is at Now About That Pod. So we don't come up in the search, then we're not on that platform. If there's something you would like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email us at nowaboutthatpod@gmail.com. Visit our website, www.nowaboutthatproductions.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text message with anything you would like us to discuss. Our phone number is 765-557-4170. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you have a great week since this will be coming out on Monday. Sarah, enjoy the weekend, and you're 2 weeks away.
You as well.
All right. Bye, everybody. See you in 2 weeks.
Bye.